And this is Chuck Wolf. You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, listener supported radio. The topic today is about keeping people engaged. I want to talk about this because I have an upcoming series I want to do on this idea of engagement and how do we keep listeners engaged? How do we keep programmers engaged? How do we keep volunteers engaged? That's what we're about at the station. We hope that you are engaged. And while I won't talk about fundraising beyond this moment in the beginning of the show, I do want to ask you to at least consider going to our website. If you like what you hear on our talk radio shows, if you like what you listen to in this wonderful world of music that you get to listen to all the time on WPKN, I hope that you'll take the time to go to WPKN.org and make your contribution to help keep us afloat. We appreciate you, and I know that when you do volunteer your time or your money, that you are appreciating us as well. And if you didn't know it, we got an award this year for one of the best, most innovative radio stations around doing community radio. And I hope that you are a regular listener. And if you just happen to be tuning in, I hope you get to spend lots and lots of your time listening to this wonderful station. My show is The Emotion Roadmap. Take the wheel and control how you feel. And I'm Chuck Wolf, and I'm part of our hour-long series at noontime during the middle of the week. And this show is about helping people deal with emotional challenges. Now, sometimes people call in with a challenge that they've been waiting to talk to me about, and I'm happy to take your calls if you're a regular listener. I want to thank you for tuning in, and I also want to be available to you to answer your questions. I always come in with topics because I know sometimes that people are not always comfortable calling into the radio station with something personal or professionally challenging, and so I like to have a topic or two that I want to talk about when I first come on to the show. At the same time, though, I know I have regular listeners that tune in all the time, and thank you so much for tuning in today. And if you have something you'd like to talk to me about, I give you the number, and you're welcome to call, and I'll try and help you. First, let me just spend a moment for anybody that might be new to the show, just talking about what I do on the show. The show is all about helping people deal with challenges in their lives. Sometimes I find, in fact, oftentimes I find when smart people are stuck, it's almost always because something emotional is happening either inside them or inside somebody that they're dealing with. Now, if you think for a moment of your own personal and professional life, and you consider places where you're uncertain how to proceed, you're a little confused about what to do next. You have a major decision or a conflict or a situation that's very challenging that you're facing, and you're really uncomfortable taking that next step. You're really unsure what to do. My guess is if you stopped and asked yourself, well, how am I feeling emotionally? You'd see that the emotion is part of what's going on that's making it difficult. Good critical thinkers, excellent problem solvers, often get stuck when something emotional is in play because we don't have a lot of experience or training or knowledge or expertise in dealing with emotions. I've been privileged in my career to have the opportunity to work with very brilliant people, some of the pioneers in the field of what's called emotional intelligence. One of whom is the president of Yale University, Peter Salovey, and his colleague Jack Mayer, who's a professor at the University of New Hampshire. These two gentlemen were the authors of the original study that catapulted emotional intelligence into worldwide recognition, and Daniel Goleman was someone who promoted and publicized information about emotional intelligence that built on their work, added some additional ideas, and there's a lot going on all over the world today in this field. Well, one of the things that I did early on when this was first emerging about 20 years ago was I got asked to be involved with Peter Salovey and Jack Mayer and help them to find a way to make what they were learning about in laboratories and in field studies, make it practical, make it useful, make it something that people could do something with. If there really was this idea of an emotional intelligence, what could you do with emotional intelligence? What could you learn from it, and how could it make life better? Now, my vision and mission for my life has always been about helping people make a meaningful, positive difference in their lives. And I hope to do that for you on this show. And so what I helped them create and became my own innovation was this idea of an emotion roadmap. And again, the show's called The Emotion Roadmap, Take the Wheel and Control How You Feel. And I'm Chuck Wolf, your host. So this emotion roadmap is my creation that helps people understand how to be proactive, how to be strategic and tactical in dealing with one's own emotions and emotions of others that you have to be dealing with. Sometimes it's people that you're dealing with at home that you love. Sometimes it's people at work that you don't even like, but you have to deal with. In all those situations, emotions are always present. Sometimes they're the most important variable in play that makes a difference in terms of how you actually move forward and whether or not you're successful. So I help people be more successful, develop a plan of action that capitalizes on this whole science of emotional intelligence and this idea of an emotion roadmap. And an emotion roadmap basically has as a foundation the idea that when you're feeling something very powerfully and you recognize that that feeling isn't helpful, then I ask you to think about what would be ideal to feel. If you could magically change the feelings that you're having to ones that would be more ideal, what would they be? The one example I think is pretty easy for everyone to understand I like to use is that, you know, say you have an important presentation to make or a speech to make you're going to be in front of a group of people and that you want to impress them somehow and you're feeling anxious and you want to feel confident. How do you do that? So that's what the show is about, helping people move from a feeling that isn't particularly helpful to a feeling that is far more ideal. So if you're a regular caller and you're waiting to call in, now's the time. It's 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. So, if you've got something that you've been waiting to talk to me about, I'm happy to talk with you about it right now, or you can wait, and I'll be talking about a particular topic that I'd like to engage listeners about. But again, I'll give you the number because I always like to at least allow a few minutes at the beginning of the show if someone's been waiting to call in, to make the call now. And if you've got something that you're wondering, should I call, shouldn't I call? If you're a regular listener to the show, you know that just about everybody that makes that call, that takes that leap of faith that maybe this strange person at the other end of the microphone, this Chuck Wolf, might actually be able to help me with something where I'm stuck, something important to me. The beauty of the show is if you call in and I help you at the same time I'm explaining how I'm helping you by talking about the emotion roadmap. And my goal is for everyone to learn how to use this emotion roadmap in their own lives. Most people can't afford to hire a professional consultant or expert to come into their lives. Oh, here's my first call. Hi, this is Chuck Wolf. You're on the air. Who am I talking to?
Yeah, my name's Ed.
Hi, Ed. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you today?
Pretty good. Thanks for the call. How can I help you?
Hey, I want to know what your view is on the afterlife or heaven or paradise or anything of that nature. I'm just curious because I've been, you know, studying the Bible of late, and it's going back centuries, it seems, it states that you die and your soul is, well, this is what I'm trying to get at. Is it suspended, do you think, somewhere, and then we're waiting for the revelation, you know, is everybody in some kind of stasis? Do you have any idea how that might work?
Well, of course, you're going to get just an opinion because I don't have any expertise in knowing what happens to you when you die, of course. But I think all the other calls following yours that are going to be a little easier to answer. But you're asking me about my personal belief, and I'm happy to tell you about that. And so I tend to be a pragmatist, and I look at the choice of is there an afterlife or is there not an afterlife, and I can't see any upside to believing there's no afterlife. So just from a pragmatic, practical point of view, I want to believe that there's an afterlife. And I think that the idea of, you know, the universe is, we're all connected at some level. I absolutely believe that. And I think through physics and mathematics and other very scientific ways, we can understand how we're all connected in different ways. And so I do think that there might be some kind of afterlife where something of a soul exists. I don't think the body stays. I don't think the personality necessarily stays. But is there a place where you go and you see people from the past that have since passed on? I tend to find some comfort in believing that. I have no way of knowing. The only way you know that is to die and see what happens. And then
you call it faith.
Yeah. So if I'm wrong, I'll never know it. And if I'm right, I get to say I was right when I get up there. So that's how I think about it. I find it comforting. I know some people say, well, it's a crutch. Well, I mean, again, my point of view is simple on this. It's like, how do I want to feel, right? I mean, that's what my show's about. I want to feel as though there's the possibility that exists. And so I ask myself, if I want to believe or I don't want to believe, I want to believe. And so I choose to. And I see no downside to that. Yeah.
It's comfortable to believe that because,
right.
Like, one of my thoughts is, well, you know, me personally, I figure I've just been a major screw-up. I was born with a pretty high level of intelligence and squandered just about every opportunity. And I know you don't get a do-over, but, like, one of the things I was wondering is, well, you know, do they have cars in the afterlife? Or would you get to take up a hobby that you never were any good at or things like that? So I guess it's all a matter of faith. And wanting to believe and then trusting in what you were, you know, taught when you were a child. Because, like, having, I like to say I'm like a recovering Catholic because I realize there's a lot in that dogma that just doesn't line up with, say, what a, you know, a true the Christians claim, you know, as far as, well, for example, not having a false God, right? So I think about my aunts and any of my antecedents who were devout Catholics and went to all of these other, you know, celebrations for these other saints and stuff. And I wonder, Jesus, God get angry with this, you know, and I can't picture these people being in a place like hell with fire and brimstone and eternal damnation because one of my aunts, for example, used to travel to Russia and literally smuggle in blue jeans and Hershey bars and things that they could get over there. And they went to these underground churches and stuff. So somebody that was that good, even though they didn't follow the straight line that the Christians would have you take today, I can't imagine, you know, the Lord punishing them and saying, oh, no, well, you didn't do everything right, so you can't come to my paradise. And,
yeah.
And then when you consider there's, say, seven major religions in the world, they all believe in some type of creator, some higher power, you know, an entity that brought us here, and I figure that's all linked somehow. It's just a matter of interpretation. You know, what you were raised at, but I really been pondering it lately, you know. Nobody gets a glimpse or a preview. You just have to, like you said, it's comforting to have that faith, I guess. So that's,
right, right. I guess the one thing I'd say in closing, there's somebody else trying to call, so you're welcome to call back in a moment. But one of the things I'd say in closing is that I tend to think religion also has, it feeds a topic I want to talk about today, which is this idea of engagement. And religions across the board have had a hard time engaging people in recent times. And I think that part of the emphasis on what might make religion more attractive to people is all the good stuff that's associated with religion. But we all know and have seen that there's also a lot of negativity sometimes when, you know, we tend to view only our way of thinking as the right way and the only way. And again,
and
sometimes
not even room for somebody else's beliefs.
Yeah, so I tend to be very tolerant of lots of people's beliefs as long as they're not harmful to anyone else and as long as they're not harmful to that same person. So I tend to look at religion as something that provides some guidance that people find enjoyable at times. Also, at times, I think it goes off the rails a little bit when people look at the things inside religion that take them down a dark path. So I think you have to, you know, be thoughtful and mindful and spiritual. I tend to favor spirituality in terms of my own way of thinking about life and what I feel and believe. So, but I welcome the call, Ed, and I appreciate your calling in. I don't know if I've helped you at all, but I tend to ask myself, how do I want to feel about things? And then I try to choose the feeling that makes me feel the best, that's most useful to me. And that's what I never really thought about it this way about religion and afterlife, but in your asking the question, I'm thinking that's the way I answer it.
Well, no, that's good because I was basically looking for your view. I listen to you a lot and trust your opinion, which is what it is. So, yeah, no, that makes sense to me. It does, you know, it sounds feasible. And again, it's all about faith, what you believe in, treat others as you wish to be treated, and just hope for the best in the end. I mean, because we can't, like, think about the snake handlers. Like, that's crazy. Eventually, the snake's going to bite you. So, all right, hey, thanks. Have an enjoyable day.
Thanks a lot, Ed. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye now. I guess it's kind of an appropriate call, right? It's that time of year around the holidays, and thinking about religion is pretty much in a lot of people's minds these days, I guess. There's lots of things that make me think about the afterlife. Sometimes I get callers who are dealing with a very major illness or disease like cancer, and they're wondering how to deal with that, how to feel okay about that. And the way partly I think about this, and even to you, Ed, you said that, you did a lot of things that you didn't probably, you wish you had a do-over. I always believe that, every day in a sense is a new day with new opportunities, and whatever's happened in the past, I think you want to learn from it as best you can. I mean, sometimes there are situations with people that, you do want to ask for forgiveness if you really wrong somebody. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. But you can always do a kindness for someone going forward. So I do believe that whatever's taken place in the past, sometimes an awareness and a sensibility and a morality show up late in life as opposed to early on. And if that's the case for anyone listening, that doesn't mean that you can't make the best of every day going forward. And for those people who have had a diagnosis of cancer and, they sort of know the time frame for when it's all going to end for them, I think we all know it's going to end, right? We all know it's going to end. So the question of knowing that it's going to end in 3 months or 3 years instead of sometime, it just forces you to pay attention to every day and to value every moment in meaningful ways, to do what you can to make the world a better place. That's partly the mantra I try to live by, and most days I'm pretty good about it. But I have a show that gets listened to a lot. That was a show that I did some time ago. It's called "Just Good Enough Is Perfect," because none of us are perfect. I was just talking to a friend of mine who's dealing with a relationship issue, and he and this woman are thinking about getting together, and they love each other, but they haven't been able to stay together for a variety of reasons every time they've tried it. I think that, they're both aging, and they're both at the place now where neither one of them wants to be alone. And so they're willing to try and really hard to get past the things that have derailed them in the past. And in thinking about that, I said, there's going to be days, if you do this, where you do get together and you start a new life together, then you're going to say, I hate this. I hate this. I wish I never did this. I'm so sorry I made this decision. And I said, but most of the days aren't going to be like that. And when you have a day like that, realize that, hey, it's just part of the deal that I signed on for. And you know what? The deal's a good deal, and this is a bad day, and I recognize that. And I'm going to have some bad days because life isn't perfect, but it is good enough. It is good enough, and it's better than what I had, and I'm very thankful for what I got. So something to think about, folks. All right, again, the number to call, in case somebody else had called, and I encourage you to call in. I hope you didn't miss your opportunity there. The number is 203-336-9756. And I do my show by myself. I don't have anybody screening the call. So if you call when somebody else is speaking, I won't be able to pick up because I'll be talking to the person that you're hearing on the radio. But I do want to talk to you, so I'll give you another moment. Again, 203-336-9756. Well, while I'm waiting, in case anybody wants to call, just so you know, if you're new to the show and not like yet a regular listener, then there's lots of things people call about. They call about work. They call about situations where they're struggling with a boss that they have. Or sometimes leaders call in and say, I'm struggling with how to handle this person's performance. I like them. They're good. But there's things that they're doing that make me nuts. What do I do about it? Or I've got a really difficult decision to make about whether to stay or to go, leave my company, or to take this new position inside my company and leave the people that the team that I've built. I know it's a great opportunity for me and it's good for my family, but I'm feeling kind of bad about leaving my team behind. So there's a lot of reasons why people might call about work, And even more reasons why people sometimes call about home, whether it's a new relationship with someone that you'd like to have as a partner in life, whether it's someone in your immediate family that you're struggling to get along with, a sibling, a parent, an existing partner, a child, a dad or mom. There's lots of things that cause people to have emotional concerns, that cause people to be upset, and that people are finding difficult to deal with. Because the truth is, we don't get a lot of education in our lives about how to deal with emotional issues. Now, that's changing. And actually, a couple of interesting notes about that. Those, again, that listen regularly know that my show has had as guest speakers on a couple of times the director for the Center of Emotional Intelligence at Yale University, Mark Brackett. Mark's a friend and a colleague, and he has been involved heavily with Yale Center is calling the Emotion Revolution in Schools. And they've created the program called RULER, which is an acronym for helping people to regulate, understand, label, express, and deal with their emotions in constructive ways. It becomes part of the curriculum in schools. It's really pretty remarkable what Mark and his team have done, and they're committed to trying to get this into every school system that they possibly can, and they like doing Connecticut schools. So if you work in a Connecticut school system, hopefully you're engaged in that. Or at least looking at social and emotional learning for your classroom so that we do get some training along the way to help young children learn more about emotional intelligence. But one of the things that's kind of interesting that I've stayed in touch with them about is they also want to do something called the Emotion Revolution in the workplace. And there's been a survey. Actually, you can take the survey on my website. It's called the emotionroadmap.com, and it's a free survey. You just take it to let people know how you're feeling about work. But if you want some help with work, you can call right now. The number is 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. Anyway, the data analysis has begun for a lot of people have filled out this survey across lots of different places, and they are now starting to try to understand how to address it, how to address creating more emotional intelligence in the workplace. Now, a lot of companies are trying this on their own, but I think the Yale Center is going to be a very holistic, structured approach because that's the way they think about things, very systematic, very thorough. Research-based, based on real evidence and things that matter. So stay tuned. We'll be more on that. But in the meantime, I want to talk today about something called engagement. Now, when you think of engagement, for those of you that don't think about it at work, you think, well, that's about a man and a woman or a man and a woman and a woman these days gets engaged to each other to get married, right? It's about, you know, the beginning of a long-term relationship, hopefully that lasts forever. But engagement in the workplace is probably a little bit similar, but not the same. You're not married to your workplace, but you are engaged. And the people that have done at least seemingly the most work on this is a group called the Gallup Organization. They do a lot of surveys. And the remarkable thing about what Gallup finds is that in almost every company of any size, meaning more than like 5 to 10 people, there's a sense of engagement that fits a certain profile that sounds and goes like this. They could describe actively engaged employees, not engaged employees, and actively disengaged employees as three different categories. So there is the employee that can't wait to get to work in the morning and does everything she or he can possibly do to make that organization successful. This is going to be non-profit or profit, doesn't matter. It can be a school, a military organization, it can be a for-profit company, it can be a Fortune 500, it can be a small business, it doesn't matter. It means that somebody, wherever they go when they get up in the morning on Monday typically, and they go someplace, it's to work. And they're fully engaged, and they're thrilled to be there, and they're doing everything possible to make that organization succeed. And there's a percent of people in every organization, again, it's a typical organization, that fills that category. Then there's a percent of people that fill this category where they're not engaged. They just basically go to work, They're not disengaged to the point where they want to sabotage or not do their jobs. They actually want to do their jobs to the degree that they can do them without having to do any extra, because simply they view work as a way to make a living so that they can enjoy their lives. And their lives aren't about work so much. They're mostly about family and friends and community and hobbies and things that they enjoy outside of the workplace. And work's just a way to get to pay the bills. And then there's a group of people that are so upset with their work, they do very little, as little as possible, and sometimes even try to sabotage the workplace. Now, what's fascinating to me is that Gallup consistently, year after year, and I paid attention for a lot of years, Gallup consistently finds that about 20% of the workforce is actively engaged. 60% or 61 or 2% or something like that are not engaged. And maybe 17, 18, 19%, depending on the organization, are actively disengaged. So you have almost as many people that are actively trying to sabotage the company as you do trying to make the company as successful as possible. And most people just don't care. And it's not that they don't care at all. They just don't care in a big way. They want to do their job. They want to be, you know, successful. They want to fly under the radar, not have anybody pay any real attention to them. They want to earn a living and come home and enjoy life outside of work. And they're not really thinking about work when they're gone. So for every company that's out there that's making profits or nonprofits or hitting their financial goals successfully, if you think about your organization as typical, then you have to realize that 8 out of every 10 people in most organizations across all of North America, where Gallup does these polls all the time, don't really care much about what happens in their workplace, or at least aren't doing everything they can to support the success of their organization. 8 out of 10, that's almost everybody. And so however successful organizations are being, how much more successful could you be if you push that 60% into actively engaged, at least mildly actively engaged, and somehow you really lowered that number of disengaged, resistant employees that want to sabotage your company, that are so hateful and spiteful about what their experience has been in your company? What is all that about? It's an emotional issue, engagement. And so the way I think about this is, how can companies do better to engage people? And the reason I'm thinking about this is I've met some really interesting people recently that have got me thinking about it. One of the people I'm friendly with is someone in a very big, and I don't want to say his company yet because he's waiting to get approval, but he's in a very big, well-respected Fortune 500 company, and he's in charge of engagement analytics at that company, meaning that he does all the surveys. If you don't know this, a lot of companies internally, every year or two, they conduct a survey to see how people are feeling inside their companies. And in those surveys, they ask questions about, do you feel empowered? Do you feel like your leader, supervisor, manager is someone that cares about you? Are your goals aligned with the organization's goals? Are your values aligned with the organization's goals? Do you have a voice in what happens in your department? Are you listened to and respected? How do you feel about the culture of the organization? Do you feel the culture of the company is trusting, of your division is trusting, of your department, of your team is trusting? So you'll get questions like that, and somehow that rolls up into whether or not an employee fits this category of actively engaged, not really engaged, doing just what they need to, and then disengaged. So you can see that when you measure that, you want to know, first of all, if you're don't trust your company, if that's an issue. Some people aren't going to fill out these forms truthfully because they don't trust that they're not going to be found out saying, I don't like my boss. She or he disempowers me. They're disrespectful. They never listen to me or any of the other workers. In a company that's toxic, you may not find out it's toxic because people are afraid of being identified and punished as a result of telling the truth. Or you may be in a company that's not so toxic, but you filled out these surveys in the past and you've never seen anything happen, that anything changed. So, you know, why not just say everything's average or everything's great, because it doesn't matter anyway. And I don't want my manager to find out that the people in his unit or her unit didn't rate them highly, because then they're going to be mad at us. I don't want to be part of that. So it's counterintuitive to ask people to tell you that about a boss that's terrible, to actually write down on a survey that the boss is terrible. Because what if everybody told the truth? The boss would know that everybody said that he or she was terrible. And he or she would want to punish all of you, right? Even if they had no way of knowing exactly who said what individually. So how do you counter that? How do you get people to tell the truth? And then what do you do with the information once you get it? Sometimes when I'm doing a keynote speech, I'll tell people, I'll ask the audience. So I'd just like to see a show of hands. How many of you, and maybe this isn't in your current organization, it could be, but maybe in an organization you've been a part of in the past, have seen someone get promoted and promoted again to very high levels for no apparent reason? Now, that too sounds counterintuitive. Why would somebody be promoted for no apparent reason? Well, here's what happens. By the way, lots of times people raise their hands and then they laugh, because most people have seen this happen where you see a leader get promoted, and yet the people who work for that leader find that leader really, really difficult to work for. And yet, the person got promoted. How come? Well, it's because sometimes people can be gifted in relationship management. These days, people are calling it emotional intelligence, and it's a part of emotional intelligence, relationship management. But in any case, they do a very successful job managing upward. In other words, they know how to relate to people. They know how to be respectful. They know how to listen. They know how to get things done. They know how to work as a part of a senior team. They just don't care about the people below them. In the same way, they know that their survival hinges on how the people above them see them. So they're not necessarily an advocate for the people below them, except for what they need to get done in order to show that they're able to accomplish their objectives. But they may accomplish their objectives through fear, through coercion, force of some kind. And yet, they get promoted. So what do you do when the people above a leader rate them very highly and the people below a leader rate them very poorly? Well, kind of depends. Is anybody in the organization really paying attention to these surveys when that happens? So in a conversation with my friend, who is, again, a colleague who is in charge of these engagement surveys in this big company, I said, you know, what would you think it would be like if you asked, let's say you're in an organization chart. Some of you won't know what this looks like, but if you can picture at the top, there's a boss of the whole organization, usually called the chief executive officer. And underneath that person are some senior vice presidents. And underneath each senior vice president, there are a number of people reporting into the senior vice president. Let's just call them division heads. So what if you took a senior vice president and you said, let's say the person's name was Mary. Mary Jones was a senior vice president in this organization. And he said, Mary, I'm going to ask you, before we get the survey out this year for engagement and how well everybody's doing, for you to predict how all these different people, you have five different direct reports, all running large teams underneath you. I want you to know, on certain key questions, I want you to predict how they're going to come out. And so now you've got Mary paying closer attention, right? If she actually puts her forecast in for what she predicts is going to happen for these people, if she predicts what's going to happen for these people, she's going to look and see how they actually come out. And what if one of these people that manages her really well, that she's really high on, that she wants to promote, What if she sees that the statistics don't seem to support her view, that the people underneath have said some things that are pretty disturbing, actually, about this person in terms of the way they rated them? And it's far different than what she would have thought. And now that she was asked to predict it ahead of time, she's beginning to question, why do I feel this way and the person's people feel so differently about him or her? So we were talking about what that might be like and whether that might change the dynamic a bit. But the big deal is, when you get this information, what do you do with it? And so I actually think I'm going to, I'd like to have my colleague on the air and talking about, so what is employee engagement about as your company defines it? And how do you go about measuring it? How do you do it? How often? What happens with the results? Why do you do it that way? How can you and other organizations make this better? And where do we go next in this field, ever-evolving field of engagement, when the numbers don't really ever seem to change, at least not according to Gallup? What are some of the things we can do that are really innovative? And then I thought I'd talk to somebody who is a colleague of mine who is in sports management, sports psychology, rather, a colleague of mine who is very involved with again, I won't mention his name or state until he agrees, but I'd like to have him talk about the difference, because he's doing sports psychology for the major university in the state where he lives and for a number of the professional sports teams. And I want to talk about engagement at different levels for really high-powered, very well-paid, highly talented athletes on the college level, and how does it change when you get to being paid at the professional level. And then I have a colleague, and some of you who have been longtime listeners know that I'll mention his name because he's actually, you can actually hear some of the interviews I've done with him, John Caparella, who is a wonderful leader, a chief executive officer now for an organization, and talk to him about how he engages people. Because I have not seen his engagement studies recently, but I know in past years his engagement studies have been incredibly successful. Because he emanates this idea that people really are our greatest asset, and he lives it. So I would like to have him on, and then I have a small businessman that I'd like to have on as well. But I've talked a lot about engagement. I hope you enjoyed it. I know there's a lot of people that like to listen when I have a topic to talk about, but I'd also like it to be interactive, and I've got about, about 15 minutes left, folks. So what I'd like you to do is tell me about your story of engagement. Do you feel engaged at work? And if so, what is it about your workplace that engages you? And if you don't feel as engaged as you like, is there one thing that somebody at work could do to engage you more? Because I'd like it to be an interactive discussion. So for the rest of the time, I'm hoping I'll get calls about that. In the meantime, I want to just mention you're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, listener supported radio, serving Fairfield, New Haven, and Litchfield counties in Connecticut and Suffolk County in New York, as well as communities around the world via podcast. And we're streaming at WPKN.org. Now, if you want to listen to past shows, and there are a lot of them that are on the air now for many of us that are doing talk shows on PKN, but mine are called, again, The Emotion Roadmap with Chuck Wolf, and you can listen to them on SoundCloud. You can go to the WPKN.org page, and you can look there and click on where it says podcast, go to SoundCloud and type in Emotion Roadmap, and you should see a whole bunch of my shows. If you can't find them for some reason, you can email me and I'll send you a direct link. And the email, if you want to, by the way, I love hearing comments. If you got something you want to share and just want to say something you like about the show or something you'd like to see different or some other topic you'd like me to cover, write to me at CJ and then Wolf. Like the animal, my name is CJ Wolf, W-O-L-F with an E at the end. So CJWOLFE at CJWOLFE.com. So C for Charles, J for James, my last name Wolf with an E, CJWOLFE at CJWOLFE.com. And if you want a link to the podcast on SoundCloud, I can send that to you. If you want to tell me about a topic you'd like to hear me cover, I'd appreciate that as well. And also, if you want to simply write to me about something that you've really liked, it's great hearing that too. But right now, I'd like you to call. I'm going to wait for a moment or two for people to call in about something where you felt engaged at work, something either you did as a leader, by the way. Maybe it's you as a leader that have done some things to engage your people. I'd love to hear that, too. Or you felt engaged by somebody you work for or by a company, by something the company did. And if you don't have a time that you felt engaged, maybe you have an idea about what would be engaging. And I'd love to kind of get that conversation started today. 203-336-9756. Again, I'll say it slowly. 203-336-9756. You can let me know what you think of the idea for the series. My idea for the series is simply to have this person from this Fortune 500 company on who's in charge of engagement, this sports psychologist, and then a CEO who is really great at this stuff, and then another CEO of a smaller company, and someone I work with pretty closely on emotional intelligence. So hopefully that sounds good to you. Again, the number, and I'm looking for you to call at this point, if you could, with your ideas about engagement, 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. And I'll wait a moment. And now all my listeners that like to listen are feeling like, boy, do I have something for Chuck? Can I call? Is there anything I can think of to say to call in? He's waiting for a phone call. Well, take your best shot, you know. Just give me a call. Let me know what you think about the series. But also, hopefully, I've got listeners out there who are smart people who have something that they've experienced about this topic engagement that they can share. The number is 203-336. 9756. 203-336-9756. Yeah, you're leaving the show to me, I guess. Well, one of the things that I'll just tell you a few things myself that I found really engaging. I have found that when people are really good about being clear and transparent about what they're trying to accomplish, and they come in as leaders to a team and they say, okay, team, this is my goal. This is what I want to do. This is how I'm thinking about doing it. I am open to change, not to change about the goal. The goal is pretty much locked in, but I am open to change regarding how we get there. Hi, thanks for the call. You're on the air. Who am I talking to, please?
Hi, my name is Sue.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I never listened to your show before. I have to say I love it.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I hope you get to listen more.
I do have a question for you. What happens when you're more engaged than your boss is?
Well, I'm guessing that's your situation. Am I correct in guessing that?
Yes, you are.
And so you're asking me to tell me how you're feeling or what's going on for you?
I'm asking how to handle it.
Ah, okay.
I guess. So well, when you care more when you're more passionate than your boss is?
So the way I think about, just so your first time listening to the show, so I think about the feelings that are involved. So the feelings that you have right now is you're engaged fully with this company, and your boss is, would you say he's disengaged or just not very engaged at all?
Or, not as engaged.
Okay, so he's not actively sabotaging yet, but he's just not that excited about it.
Correct.
Okay. And you'd like him to be more excited, right? Because it would feel more engaged to you. Because one of the things you want to feel is like, if you're pulling this hard, you want other people to be pulling that hard too. Does that sound right?
Exactly.
Okay. So there's a couple things that could happen here. One is, my guess is, you've got some ideas about this yourself, and maybe you've even tried a thing or two, or maybe you're considering some things. And so before I jump in, is there anything that you've considered or already tried?
I have, yes, but really not too. It's a big company, and there's bureaucracy, and so it's a frustration level, I think.
So yeah, if you're not real clear on where you want to go or what you can do, you're asking for a new idea or a different way of thinking about this that it's going to be make you feel better about your circumstance, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I would say is you want to feel like there's more than just you engaged here, and you have a boss, and for whatever reason, you've had some thoughts maybe about changing it, but it seems pretty hard to you to get it changed, and so you're looking for some help with that. And one way I think that you might want to think about this is that do you need the boss to feel more engaged or just someone else in the organization? In other words, is there somebody else that you might partner with, that you might work on a project with, that you might hang out with, have lunch with, who's also as excited and working as hard as you? Is there anybody around like that that might be someone that would, you know, kind of feed the need that you have to feel like it's more than just you out there?
Yeah, probably.
So yeah. One way of thinking about it then is to think maybe I want to stop trying so hard with my boss and maybe see if there's somebody else in my team that I could get more excited about this, who's already somewhat excited. Because sometimes if the person in charge, for whatever reason, they might not be that engaged. I mean, there's a million reasons why that could be. It might have nothing to do with the workplace. It might have everything to do with what's going on in their life outside of work, for instance.
Right. Yeah.
Or they may have just been there a long time and just think really the bureaucracy that you just talked about, they maybe years ago fought against it, but they're tired and they don't have the energy.
Yes. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you find that you can raise the energy and engagement level of one person in your unit, it's going to feel a little better to you, I think. Would you agree?
Probably.
And if over time you could engage another person, in other words, if you start to build some momentum, because sometimes what you want is your feeling of engagement. There's a term for it called emotional contagion. You want it to be contagious. You'd like other people to pick up on it so that when you go in the morning, you're excited and there's somebody else there that you can share that excitement with who's also feeling excited about being there and what you're working on.
Okay, I like that.
So if you can do that with one person, and this won't happen that fast for you, but if you can build it with one person and give yourself maybe 6 weeks or so to establish a relationship like that, maybe 2 months, and then maybe talk to them at some point about, hey, do you think we could engage anybody else? Who do you think we could engage to also join with us? Over time, if somebody who's sitting on top of a team finds the team starting to have this kind of feeling you have, that person potentially could get engaged as well, even though right now that seems next to impossible. But it's hard not to feel it if a lot of people on your team are feeling it. If just one person's feeling it, maybe not so much. But if you can try to build it amongst your peers, you'll feel better, number one. And number two, if it starts to build some momentum, and even if the person above you doesn't change, maybe somebody else outside the unit will see that this is a team that has a lot of energy and trying to go really hard to support the company with a leader who doesn't seem to have much vision or direction. Maybe we need to think about somebody else doing this leadership job here.
Hmm. Great. Thank you so much.
That help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot for the phone call. You bet. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So great. Thank you for calling in. And anybody else care to call? I've got a couple minutes. That's it. 203-336-9756. Actually, with just 3 minutes left, I want to make sure that I end on time because it's important that people get their time in when they need to. So let me just tell you that, again, you've been listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, listener-supported radio. We're supported by all of you. And you've been listening to us on 89.5 FM, and we serve Fairfield, New Haven, and Litchfield counties in Connecticut and Suffolk County in New York, as well as communities around the world via podcast and streaming. Oh, we got one more call. Hi, this is Chuck. You're on the air. Who's calling, please?
This is Scott.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad.
Good. I just got a couple of minutes, Scott, so you got something quick?
Yeah. I just was, I'm working in a creative environment, and it's just, the boss is method of getting the group or the people to work, anybody, it seems kind of, I don't know, negative. And I'm just wondering how to deal with that better. It's through embarrassment or through harassment or through, I can't think of all the ways to describe it, but it's just basically negative way of getting people motivated.
So you're talking about a toxic environment, really, if with those kind of negatives. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you, there's nothing simple about that, Scott. Yeah. So let me just say a couple things. One is, the person who I'll have on at a later point in time, this CEO that I've worked with in the past, what he said was he was privileged and lucky enough to have a wonderful leader that he worked for when he first started out, and he gained a tremendous amount of experience knowing what the right things to do were. He then had the experience of working for somebody like you've just described. And so while this isn't an answer, and if you can, I'm on the first and second Wednesdays of each month, so I'll be on next week, and if you'd like to call back, I'm happy to talk longer about it. But I'll leave you with this. There are things that you can learn, he said, from even the most toxic leader about what not to do. And try to see if there's something that you can gain about, if I was in that spot, how would I have done this differently? How would I make this better so people respond from a positive perspective instead of being coerced or feel like they're shamed into doing something? Because whenever you get people to do things under those circumstances, you're never getting anybody's best work, and that's why people sometimes become actively disengaged. That okay. Help?
That did.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott, for the call. I got to run.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You've been listening to Chuck Wolf, The Emotion Roadmap. Take that wheel and control how you feel, everyone. And I'll be with you next week, so I look forward to talking to you then. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye now.